My name is Jerry Walter. I was a staff photographer at the Cincinnati Enquirer for about 12 years before the Beverly Hills fire.
Walk me through what was happening on that Saturday night of Memorial Day weekend 40 years ago.
Well, it was obviously Saturday night. The Enquirer had a smaller skeleton crew on the weekends because earlier deadlines and not always a whole lot of hard news happening unless there's sports going on. I was the only photographer working that night, and I had other assignments. I came back to the office to get them processed when back in the film days, which we don't have to worry about now. Went out to dinner on the way back from dinner, and I think I was coming back from the west side where I lived, and I got a call from the news desk on the two-way radio, keeping in mind this is prior to cell phones, so the photographers were the only ones that had two-way radios in their car. They said there was a fire at the Beverly Hills. I didn't give it much thought, since Northern Kentucky nightclub fires were rather common, almost to the point of being a joke. If I recall, the Beverly Hills had two minor fires in the prior 4 years. The Lookout House had burned down. The White Horse had burned down. Luckily, I don't think there were any casualties. It was just property damage. So when I got this call, I thought, well, let's go over and check it out, but it'll be just another Northern Kentucky nightclub fire. I got downtown, hit the bridge to go over to Northern Kentucky, and I think at that time it was the bridge going over to York Street, and I saw the sky aglow. From downtown Cincinnati, the sky was on fire. So at that point, I realized that this was the real thing. This was not a practice run. I arrived, I can't remember exactly when, but I think it was shortly after 9 p.m., and the structure was fully involved. When I got up there, the fire department, there were some trucks there, other ones just setting up. Went around to the north side of the building, which seemed to be the only door that was open, and there were bodies strewn all over the lawn. I could still hear people inside for a short period of time, and that faded away shortly.
You could hear people calling or moaning?
Yes, very short period of time, and I guess that's how long it took the smoke or fumes to get to the people. On the east side of the building, if I recall, it was the east side, there was a door that was closed. So at this time, all the exits had not been open. And when they were open, there were obviously deceased piled against the door. It was a time when, I guess in the previous 12 years, I learned at news events how to separate emotions from covering the event. You had to kind of turn off your emotions, absorb what's happening, and try to communicate it in the form of photographs. The first time I ever had anything like this happen was shortly after I started at the Enquirer. I was still a college student at XU, and it was an American Airlines Flight 383, which went down on the hill outside of Kentucky, and or outside of the greater Cincinnati airport. And it was the first big event I covered. A lot of tragedy, a lot of carnage, and a lot of death. But the difference was nobody was there alive. It's a hard thing to say. So it was a little bit easier to turn off my mind. At Beverly Hills, when there were still survivors there and people running around crying and other people volunteering to aid, it was very difficult to separate emotions from covering the news. So that's good and bad in some respects. You can get a little deeper into it, maybe communicate what you're seeing a little bit better photographically, but it does make it tough. And I guess I can say I saw the best and the worst of people. There were volunteers. Some of them were guests of the club, trying to assist people that were still alive and trying to do what they could do. The worst side, shortly after they started bringing bodies out, there were people that came on the scene and started looting the bodies. That was the good and bad of it all, but that seemed to be human nature.
I want to back you up a little bit. You had a little bit of a working knowledge of the interior of the club. You had been there several times shooting what we called society pictures or gatherings for clubs and meetings and things for the society pages of the Enquirer.
I had prior knowledge to the Beverly Hills because being a photographer, not everything is news. Some of it is more mundane, women's clubs, society, Kiwanis Club meetings, and so on. And there were many organizations in greater Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky that had their events there, whether it be a luncheon, a dinner, or whatever. So I had to get over there on a number of occasions. My untrained eye told me that there's a problem with this place, and it's a disaster waiting to happen. Seeing the meandering hallways, some of them went into blank walls, rooms off of all these hallways, and poor lighting in some areas. I'd go over there looking for a particular room, and I would get lost, even after I'd been in there a few times. You would see doors that were there, not properly marked. One instance, I saw something I thought was a door. It was a wall that was wallpapered and decorated in a way that I took as a door, and curtains were around it to make it look like a doorway, but I couldn't get out.
It was just literally a fake door, a decorative door?
I looked at it as being a door. Whether or not that was their intention, I have no idea. But looking at that place and all the fabric and meandering hallways and so on, it just looked like if anything ever happened, it would be over. The place seemed to be a fire trap to me. I had built a couple houses up to then, so I know a little bit about construction, but obviously not a safety expert. So I was not surprised to hear there was a fire, but the extent of it, I was rather shocked.
The photo of yours that I remember the most, and I believe that was the front page image, you were kind of half partway down the front hill along the highway, the bodies kind of laying in the foreground. Men in suits, women in nice dresses, and the flames of the building above it. I mean, I just thought that captured the essence of the tragedy.
Yes, that page one picture, I think it did capture the essence of the tragedy more than anyone, because it does have people in suits, women in their nightdresses, so it shows that they're just regular people, people wandering around in their days, and the fire still blazing in the background. That was the exit that was open when I got there, and that's where I saw the first carnage and dead bodies.
That was, I think, a great news photo, but I was wondering, did you ever hear back from your editors? Was there any hesitation of running something that was basically going to say that we're going to put the deceased on the front page?
There was some discussion, but I think this was of such a magnitude that it had to be put on the front page. I know the editors at the Enquirer always showed sensitivity to that, but in this case, it was such a disaster that the only way to communicate that disaster was to show the disaster as it was. In fact, when that picture went out on the AP wire, we started getting phone calls from all over the world about this fire. It was considered a major disaster. I remember Stern Magazine, Der Spiegel, Paris Match, all of them did stories on the Beverly Hills fire. They used my pictures, and I assume some other people's pictures also. So it was a big enough event that would warrant putting it on page one, and even though it could have some ramifications for especially the families that were involved.
People on radio obviously can't see this, but you brought some of the other images. What are the other memorable images that you photographed that night?
All these aren't my images, but there's one that just kind of sums it up. A tattered sign at the bottom of the hill, the big Beverly Hills sign, with a woman sitting there at the sign. It says Davidson on it. So he was the headliner that night. So that kind of set the stage. Other pictures were overall pictures of the fire from the east side of the building, where all the statuary was, that showed, you know, the elegance of the place. The one that you just referred to, of the people lying on the ground and other people meandering around. Rescue pictures. There's a picture of a fireman helping a woman in her nightdress. She looked unconscious, and quite frankly, I thought she was deceased at the time, and I found out later that she survived.
Was that the Erlanger firefighter that was pulling up?
Since there were so many fire companies involved, I'm not sure which one he was. And I might have known at the time, but after 40 years, it's...
You would have had just a camera or two and a flash?
At that time... Generally travel with at least two camera bodies, so we could use wide-angle telephoto and so on without having to switch lenses too much, and a flash. Although, to get the impact on these, it was a combination flash and available light. So it was strictly flash. You wouldn't see the fire in the background. So it had to be a little bit of a balancing act between flash and available light. There's another time that it was a little bit more difficult with film. Today, with the digital, it's much easier to do. I must admit that digital is far better than film. I never thought it would be.
But whereas digital, even with your phone, if you've got a lot of capacity, you could shoot 200-300 pictures and just delete them what you don't like or need. In your case, you were shooting film, which means you had to have X number of rolls of film, and when you ran out, you were out.
That's right. You had to be very discriminating in what you shot for two reasons. One, like you said, you got a limited amount of film, and you certainly don't want to run out of film right before the picture of the event. And the other thing is, especially on a Saturday night, as you know, you worked at the paper. We had five editions at the time, five different deadlines. And on Saturday night, the deadlines were early. So had to pick and choose what you shot at the time because you wouldn't have time to process 10 rolls of 36 exposures. You had to pick and choose the roles that you have time to process to make it even for an extended deadline. So working very quickly.
So you had to get back to 617 Vine Street and literally soup and process the film and print your prints. How long do you think you were at the fire scene?
I arrived on the scene, I think, slightly after 9 o'clock, and I was probably there until about 10:30. Obviously, I could have stayed longer, gotten more pictures, but because of the early deadline of Saturday night, even though the decision was made to extend the deadline because of the gravity of the event, it still takes time to process the film, dry it, print it, and then it has to go to the engravers, whereas everything now digital can be done from site. So a judgment call had to be made as to when to leave. I knew in the past that when a photographer was asked, should we extend the deadline, we were giving very stern warnings that if we're wrong, this cost a lot of money. So, but this one, it was a no-brainer.
When you left about 10:30, by that time, were there other photographers from the Enquirer on the scene?
Oh, there were other photographers from the Enquirer and TV media, wire services. Everybody was there by that time.
What do you remember after you got back, souped the film and made your prints and brought them out to the Page One editor or whoever was the group of editors who had been laying out the page? What their reaction to when they could see the images, because they could only see what was on TV or hear reports of it?
It was shocking for everyone. And I had a pre-edit for the ones that were going to go in that night. And obviously, there were pictures run after that. But I had a pre-edit those, so I had to print just the ones that had the most impact. Words couldn't describe on a two-way radio. I was in a bit of shock when I'd call in. All I could say is, horrible, it was bad. Very limited explanation. But when they saw the pictures, they knew that was it. At times, a photographer would always complain that the paper doesn't use enough graphics. They don't use pictures big enough. They don't put them on page one. Well, the editor saw the gravity of this, and the pictures were well displayed.
Again, this was before cell phones. So your only contact with editors or supervisors who are trying to put together the print and the pictures and everything back at the Enquirer's newsroom was simply by walkie-talkie, right?
Walkie-talkie. We actually had a two-way radio in the car in addition to the walkie-talkie. So we're in the car, we used a regular two-way radio, the same thing the police had at that time. And when we got out of the car, we had the benefit of the walkie-talkie. So we could answer questions from the scene because some of the reporters prior to getting there were asking basic questions that I could answer on the radio. And talking about not having cell phones at the time, I had a little bit of a personal investment in this. And if I would have had a cell phone, I would have ended the anxiety. But my younger sister, who was in graduate school at the time, played in a musical group. She played the flute. Well, she had a wedding at the Beverly Hills that day. And thank God she just played the wedding and not the reception. So she left right before the fire started. But I was not aware of that until the next morning. So I was living with a little bit of anxiety and fear that I might see my own sister. Thank God it didn't turn out that way.
So without a cell phone, it really took you probably 10, 12 hours before you could resolve that?
If I recall, yeah, she did call me the next day. A lot of that was blurred together. I don't think it was that night. It was the next morning. It was a little bit of anguish.
Did you go back the subsequent days as they were doing some recovery and the deconstruction of the building?
I did. A lot of that was covered by other photographers. Bob Free did the aerials. Fred Straub did some disassembly pictures. Mark Tritel. I think Bob Lynn just did pictures at the Fort Thomas Armory that night. But the whole staff got involved one way or another through this whole thing, all the way to going to some of the hearings on the cause and the lawsuits and so on. As we all know now, that Beverly Hills was probably responsible for the birth of class action suits with Stan Chesley. I did cover some of those preliminary civil hearings and never heard anything like that before.
Had you been there to dinner in a show?
Not in many years. No, not in many years. My wife now, when she was in college at NKU, was a cocktail waitress there. She had quit there a couple years before, But I remember her telling me that she didn't feel safe working there because of the overcrowding, having to pass drinks across tables because you can't get to them, very similar as to what was described in the Cabernet room. So she had more of an experience than I had at Beverly Hills as far as being directly involved in going over there for the entertainment or dinner or drinks or whatever. It didn't seem like that for big events that the overcrowding was uncommon. You know, that room, I think, was supposed to hold 600 people, and they had as many as 1,300 people in there. In fact, my sister told me she that day that she was there for the wedding, saw the cabaret room, and commented about how close the tables were together, chairs sitting in front of the exits, and so on. So it's something that was apparently pretty common.
When you go to clubs, restaurants, events, and you walk in a room and see it very crowded, does the Beverly Hills still stick in the back of your mind?
Every time I walk into a venue, whether it be a restaurant, a concert, a movie, I look and see where the exit is. That's the first thing I do. In fact, my wife and I spent a little bit of time in Tucson this year, and she being a Wisconsin person, Wisconsin people are always Wisconsin people. There was a little restaurant and bar that was like a country, Wisconsin country bar, and we had friends from Wisconsin come. We went in there, and I could tell this place had limited access to the outside. So the first thing I did was look for the door and said, that's where I want to sit. So, it sticks with you. It really does.
What about we've never asked you this before, and if you don't want to answer, that's okay. Some of the horrible images you saw, have those stuck with you, or did it take you a while to get over that night?
The images I saw that night stuck with me for quite a while, but after 40 years, I was able to pretty much put them out of my mind. I must admit that since I was contacted by you to do this interview, I did a little research. You sent me some research material, and it kind of refreshed the memories, good and bad. And I guess, obviously, that it brings up horrible memories, but it also makes you know you've got to be vigilant about, like you said, finding out where the door is, making sure you're in a place that's conforming to regulations, making sure there are regulations. Very simple regulations, if they would have been followed in Beverly Hills situation, could have saved a lot of lives. Just the doors opening the wrong way, or overcrowding, or not doing proper building inspections, inferior wiring, and so on. And so I think today we got to make sure that if there are regulations, they're followed. And sometimes they seem to be a little overbearing, but in this case, it could have saved a lot of lives.
I sent you a link to the Enquirer photo gallery, and you got to see some of the pictures. But I also think that, is there something also inside of you that says, you know, I did a pretty darn good job?
I do think I did a pretty darn good job on that, considering the limited time and the magnitude of the event. You can always feel like you could do a better job, obviously. But considering the circumstances, I did a pretty good job. And everybody at the Enquirer that handled this did a wonderful job. I mean, that's what brings the professionalism out in people, an event like this. You think you're slogging along for months on end thinking the work you do doesn't mean anything. But when something like this happens, everybody's professionalism comes to the top. And I mean everybody that was working on that night.
When you were on scene, because the reporters and the photographers would have had the same walkie-talkie on the same frequency, did you interact with them or say, you know, come to this side or this is?
Oh, absolutely.
So there was a lot of exchange of information?
Absolutely, because the reporter would notify me that it was something over here that you might be interested in, and I would say, hey, I just talked to a person you might want to talk to. So obviously we worked very, very closely together.
At some point in the evening, you saw Richard Schilling in an auto or a limousine?
Shortly after I got there and got my initial pictures, I went around to the front of, I think it was the front, which would be the south side, front entrance, and there was, if I recall, a black limousine there. The back door was open, and Richard Schilling was sitting in the back. And obviously he was not happy, but my impression was, just reading emotions, that he was pretty upset that he was losing his club. What I heard, that one of his sons was out there helping people, but that didn't seem to be what Richard Schilling was doing. So it kind of struck the chord. Like I said, you see the best of people and the worst of people. And I guess without putting yourself in that situation, it's hard to be critical. But that was just my observation.
So you've got this beehive activity with the first responders, the police, fire, who all hands on deck, and then, of course, the media. But I would imagine that there is just also some people that were the victims, the people who were there for the club, a dinner, or a show, who were just absolutely in shock because of what they experienced or have looking for or having lost a loved one.
Oh, absolutely. There were still a lot of victims and victims' families that were being impacted. And what you can see from the one picture, the page one picture, people were wandering around in a daze looking at the deceased. So it was still a very traumatic and emotional situation at that time. You had people that were victims of this that were trying to help other victims, the people that were lucky enough to still be conscious and uninjured. So it was, for the most part, pretty much all hands-on event with a few exceptions.
And those people walking around, like in your page one picture, it could be people just in shock, or it could be someone looking for a friend, a spouse, a family member.
I think it's both, in shock and looking for a friend or spouse or family member. When you see how they're dressed, they were all dressed out to have a good time, dressed for dinner and a show. So you know that they were there as a patron and not a rescue person. So it was very traumatic.